the good liars.
The good liars?
This is boring.
We're boring.
I will die standing in my boots.
Herschel, yeah. I got you some condoms.
What made everyone so weird and sad that they had to come out here?
Oh, Mr. President, welcome to the show.
We are the good liars, and we are going to tell the truth. Trust us. Welcome to The Good Liars Tell the Truth. I am Jason Selvig.
And I'm DeBrom Stiefler, and we are the good liars.
And we may be the good liars, but on this show, we are going to tell you the truth. And the truth is, last night, it was the vice presidential debate between Governor Tim Walz of Minnesota and Senator J.D. Vance of Ohio. We're going to dive into it, the good, the bad, and the ugly of it. And there was plenty of ugly in there, DeBrom, plenty of ugly. But before we get into that, I want to remind everyone that you can support us on Hero Hero for just $5 a month, herohero.co/thegoodliars. You can find the link in the description here. But let's dive into it. The very first and only vice presidential debate. But before we get into the debate, we want to talk about our experience this last weekend in Monroeville, Pennsylvania. We went to a J.D. Vance event, and it was kind of telling for us. It kind of gave us a preview of the debate. Now, the event was hosted by a preacher who said Kamala Harris practiced witchcraft in the first debate. I'm going to play a clip of him right here.
What was accomplished was she can look presidential, and that's, we'll go to this later, that's the seduction of what I would say is witchcraft. What you're seeing now is a real Jezebel. You're going to see a lot of people saying that.
So, DeBrom, this guy was hosting an event that J.D. Vance was speaking at, and a lot of people were talking about this. He was talking about witchcraft, like some really out there kind of crazy, crazy stuff. So we decided to go there, and we didn't get inside for the J.D. Vance speech because they shut the doors like an hour and a half before he was speaking for security concerns, I guess. But we listened to the J.D. Vance his kind of Q&A that he was having with the audience. And what were your takeaways from hearing J.D. Vance, you know, maybe for the first time in full since this election has gotten into full swing?
My takeaway was that J.D. Vance was able to kind of answer all of these questions. He was taking questions from the audience, so it felt like they were genuine questions in the moment. So he was reacting in the moment. He was able to answer them in this setting of like this hyper-Christian environment that were in which, you know, kind of sponsored and organized by this guy who had said Kamala Harris practices witchcraft, all these things that are kind of extreme, maybe not super understandable to your average audience, and make them sound kind of reasonable and palatable. Like that's his talent. He had three-part answers to everything. It seemed like he was very well rehearsed, and he was able to kind of back up the extreme viewpoints in a way that sounded very reasonable and almost like, how could you disagree with this guy? Look, he's got it all figured. He's thought about all of it, and it all sounds, you know, pretty nice, pretty kind.
Yeah, I think we were discussing this in the car when we were listening to it, and we were both kind of like blown away a little bit by Vance, by how polished he sounded, and every single answer had like a three-part answer where he added a personal story, then went into policy. And we were both thinking, and we talked about this, that the debate, he's going to do really well in the debate. Like all the clips you see that's put out there, especially like, you know, by the left-leaning people, they're always like the gaffes, they're always like his awkward moments. But seeing him there, we were both impressed by how polished he was and how, like you said, he took this super crazy ideas that were being spewed at this event and made them seem totally reasonable, which is exactly what he has to do with Donald Trump. Donald Trump says these incredibly like crazy things, and he's talking out of both sides of his mouth. And J.D. Vance was able to just kind of make everything seem normal and would say it in a very matter-of-fact way.
It's almost like he had like a kill him with kindness like mentality going into. He was like, no matter what, I'm going to, like you said, relate it to a personal story, talk about why I care so much about it. And then it's almost like what comes afterwards is the actual meat of the answer. Almost feels like an afterthought. He's like gotten you on board a little bit, and then he'll just kind of say, and that's why this is so important that we, you know, honor our you know, local churches or whatever.
Right.
You know, those local churches might be behind trying to ban books or might be behind trying to do any number of things that we would think are kind of extreme, but he manages to like gloss over it, which to your point, we thought was a pretty good debate practice.
Yeah, exactly. And we, like, I talked to a woman inside the event who was like, the Bible should be taught in public schools. Like, totally, like, you know, against the First Amendment, really, that it should be taught as like a history book and a science book in schools. And J.D. Vance was able to go in this event. He didn't offend anybody in the event, but also I think he didn't like dive into the crazy, which is kind of an important thing for being a running mate of Donald Trump. You kind of got to balance out Donald Trump's impulses there. So going into this debate, we were like, J.D. Vance is very polished. And also, there were reports that Tim Walz was nervous. And I think when the debate started, we watched it with a big group of people. You could kind of feel in the room, Tim Walz did not seem like he was at ease. And to the other half of that is, J.D. Vance seemed completely at ease on stage. What did you think about Tim Walz's, like, the way he was presenting himself?
Well, I think we're going to play in a little bit. We're going to play some of Walz's rougher moments. One of those is the answer to the first question, which I think a debate should start. The moderators should say, like, introduce yourselves to the audience or whatever, because there's a weird thing where, like, they went into like a multiple part question about breaking news about one of the most complicated things that's happened in recent memory.
Yeah.
In, Iran firing all these missiles at Israel. And like, there's so much to this conflict. And they spelled it out in a bunch of steps and then were like, and what do you think about that? And they haven't even, you know, you're into this incredibly complicated thing within 20 seconds. And Walz didn't handle it very well. He was pausing every second. He kept using the word fundamental over and over again. It was like his kind of fallback thing. I thought it was a tough position to be in, but he certainly didn't like handle it great. And I think there was a collective kind of like gulp in the room, which I think, you know, for New Yorkers probably hoping that Walz would win, you could kind of feel the discomfort a little bit when the first question was posed.
But J.D. Vance, I thought, handled it well in that he was like, this is a big question, but I'm going to say my rehearsed remarks. I'm going to introduce myself and tell my story, which is like a contrasting story to Donald Trump, you know, born with a silver spoon. He had this tough upbringing and all that. So, and then he went in and answered the question. And it was like a confidence thing at that point where J.D. Vance seemed at ease. And, you know, for the first part of the debate, he was certainly not the one who was had the gaffe moments that I guess were
no, and it was exactly what we thought. It was like he was able to be, as we had seen him at that event, kind of collected, and he was able to make all of these you know, policies of Donald Trump seem like really palatable, and like, you know, I had this tough upbringing and these things would have made my life better. Never mind what they actually do for people, whether it be, I don't know, tax policy or any number of things, or there's so many criticisms to it. Just able to sound really reasonable. And I think he didn't go on the attack when Walz kind of struggled, which I think, again, was this policy of kill him with kindness.
Right.
And also,
opposite of Donald Trump.
Not even when it felt like there was a little bit of blood in the water. He just sat there kind of trying to show his confidence and no desperation in terms of lashing out, which felt to me like a representation of the way that they had probably been coached, which was like, don't try and make news. Don't try and be aggressive. Both candidates, we don't want you to be part of the news cycle in the last month of the election. And I felt like it was an interesting debate, but I felt that throughout.
Should we feel a little uncomfortable now and play some of the, these
moments?
We should
probably do that. Let's embrace the discomfort here. We're going to play a couple of Tim Walz moments that where he struggled a little bit, so you kind of understand what we're talking about. with that?
Israel's ability to be able to defend itself is absolutely fundamental. Getting its hostages back, fundamental, and ending the humanitarian crisis in Gaza. But the expansion of Israel and its proxies is an absolute fundamental necessity for the United States to have the steady leadership there.
Why?
Yeah, I sat in that office with those Sandy Hook parents. I've become friends with school shooters. I've seen it. Look, the NRA, I was an NRA guy for a long time. They used to teach gun safety.
You said you were in Hong Kong during the deadly Tiananmen Square protests in the spring of 1989. But Minnesota Public Radio and other media outlets are reporting that you actually didn't travel to Asia until August of that year.
I will be the first to tell you, I have poured my heart into my community. I've tried to do the best I can, but I've not been perfect. And I'm a knucklehead at times, but it's always been about that. Those same people elected me to Congress.
Okay, should we go
through
those in order?
Which one do you want to go into first?
Real quick? Yeah. Well, the first one we touched on was that first question. His response about the conflict between Israel and Iran and the launching of those ballistic missiles, he was so stilted and so nervous, and it was like, oh my God, if this debate goes this way the whole time, it is going to be like really tough to watch.
Yes.
And he confused Iran and Israel. I think at the end there he said Israel and its proxies, which Iran is the one who's talked about, having these proxies throughout the region. So I think he confused both of them a couple of times, and also just the way he was speaking. It's like, this is going to be such a long night.
Do you remember when he said I'm friends with school shooters moment?
I do, because you were like, I looked away.
You looked away, and I was like,
thought I heard it.
No.
Yeah.
He just said he's friends with school shooters. He just said his friend. And I'm like, did I mishear that? Because I didn't seem the rumors reacting, but I was like,
Right. And I looked at you, and then I was like, what did he just say? And then you said, I think he just said he's friends with school shooters. Let's just check Twitter. And I'm thinking, maybe not. And immediately, the most recent tweets, everyone's just quoting his comment. So that was a little rough. I thought that if he knew he had said that, it could have all unraveled quickly.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that was a moment I thought, if J.D. Vance were trying.
Tim.
Yeah. Darn it. What are you doing? I thought if that were Trump, he may have like pointed it out or tried to get under his skin. And Vance did not, and the moderators did not. And I thought, mercifully, they were able to like move on. But they, for a guy who's nervous, had that been pointed out in the middle of the debate, could have been rough. And then, of course, the Tiananmen Square thing, which I can't believe that was his rehearsed response.
Right, I'm a knucklehead, and still was kind of evading it a little bit with giving an actual answer on it.
But you would know that that's coming, right?
Oh, definitely. Like, I mean, you must. It's a new like breaking story. Of course, they're going to bring that up, especially if they were planning on bringing up some of J.D. Vance's comments in the past. But the other part of this, where just as the presentation, when you're watching this debate, Walls is like writing notes the entire time and looking down the entire time. He's writing down stuff the whole time, and he occasionally would just like look up and then like jerk over like he's a Muppet almost, just like staring over at Vance. And if you just look at the presentation of it, Vance, while Walls was speaking, would be looking forward or looking over.
We said he looked like a dog when the door had just been knocked on.
Oh, right. Just like look over.
Just like look over with sudden intensity, like something was about to happen. And I know we're being hard on Walls, but it just felt like he wasn't like totally crashing and bombing. But of the two of them, you would have just had to say Vance seemed
absolutely
much more prepared and at ease. You would have had to say that even as a completely neutral observer.
Yeah, absolutely. And in the governor's defense here, he has said from the very beginning, and he was like very honest about this when he was being vetted. He was like, I'm not a good debater. I'm prone to gaffes. And he said that he came out and he said that. And you definitely saw Vance, he's been in the public eye for a long time and has been on TV shows, from his book publicity to running for Senate and all that stuff. He is was very, very polished. And it, you could definitely see that on stage. And I wonder if the coaching was like, you got to write down the points so you remember it, or they, I don't know if they, when they rehearsed it, if he was really just looking down so much.
I get the sense, because I might be like this too. If a person is giving like a 3-part response, which J.D. Vance's want to do, giving multiple points, that you'd write down a couple key words for when it, they say, and would you like to respond? Like, I might do the same thing. But he seemed like, before he would even really take in the information, he was trending toward, you know, looking down and writing.
He didn't look like an active listener in those moments.
And even when he would finish a point, speaking at times, instead of landing it, making eye contact with the camera and landing a point, he would be right back down to the pad. So I don't know, just some like nervousness and debate prep stuff that maybe could have gone a little better and didn't.
Yes, yes. And this, the school shooters line, that's just, that was rough. That was rough. So Walls had not a great night. Either he had a couple of viral moments that, you know, are going to stick with him for a long time, I think. But about 44 minutes into the debate, the moderators brought up the topic of abortion. And it was in this moment that I thought Walls really kind of found his groove. And it was the first time where Vance was kind of not really, didn't feel as like that he was winning in those moments, although he had a very polished answer to it.
But it was such a, like, obviously on its face, like, evasive thing. He went into a bunch of comments, you know, when asked about Trump overturning Roe and, you know, appointing the justices that overturned Roe and all these things. He went into this thing that, I don't know, we pay more attention, I guess, than the average person. But I would think the average person would have picked up when you just say, let's make it easier to have children, that you're not answering the question. Like, let's provide more money or whatever.
And Vance was like, he was like, man, I just feel that the Republican Party, we've got to do a better job at getting the trust of people in this issue. It was like, you're the guy who was like, there should be no exception. Like, you're a guy that was like, we need to have, women need to stay in abusive relationships to raise children. Like, he is the guy who said that abortion should be outlawed in the United States.
Your point is
America.
He helped lose the trust himself.
Yes, him. It's yes. And he said he wanted to end abortion when he was running in 2022.
But the response of, and we need to be more supportive of families, is a funny response, because those are like government, you know, social programs.
Right.
That Walls was then like, you're talking about giving like child tax credits. Yes, great, to all those things.
Yeah.
Great. But, and I thought Walls did a perfectly decent job of saying, but that's different than, do women get to make the decisions about whether or not they remain pregnant, their healthcare decisions that should be made between them and their doctors. And I think an important point that people can sympathize with is like a doctor who's put in a position where a woman seems like she needs an abortion, and that's their medical opinion, and then they can't do it because of the fear that they'll be prosecuted. Like, that would be a crazy position to be a doctor. Like, but my oath is to, you know, do no harm to this patient, help them, and then I have to, like, turn them away or, you know, possibly face punishment.
Yeah.
I think people relate to that.
And Vance was kind of doing a dance around it, and I think the problem for Vance is he's not, like, saying, oh, this is how I feel, or anything like that. He's just trying to dance and, like, hit all the steps that Donald Trump has said.
Right.
And where he landed with it was, I actually think it's a great thing. This is him. This is me paraphrasing him. I actually think it's a great thing that's gone back to the states, and this is such a wonderful thing. And Walls had a great counter to that, which is like, these deaths that have happened, these terrible situations with women that you're hearing all these stories coming from all over the country, and where abortion access is limited or completely gone. These things would not be happening if they weren't happening in these states, and if it was protected federally, if Roe was the law of the land. And we talked to Pete Buttigieg.
Can I, one second. Just before we move on, also just to give people a picture of what this looked like a little more, I think it's important to note that all the while that J.D. Vance is giving these answers, he is looking like Miley Cyrus the whole time.
An important point to make. Yes, you can see
here on the screen. I think the resemblance is kind of uncanny. So if you can just imagine giving these polished answers, you know, calm, cool, collected, more or less looking like Miley Cyrus the entire time, possibly with colored contacts in. I'm not sure. And
I think he's got those beautiful baby blue eyes. I don't know. I think that's actually true. I think I remember that.
Okay.
Meeting him.
But I didn't want to put a roadblock here.
This is very important. I'm glad you brought this up. And that J.D. Vance kind of looked like Miley Cyrus. So at the DNC, we talked to Pete Buttigieg about this issue of abortion and states' rights. And we always would hear this at Trump rallies. And we wanted to have an actual answer to it because everyone just says it. They're kind of parroting Donald Trump, even though this is like wildly unpopular. So this was Mayor Pete's response here.
We've talked to a lot of Republicans who say that abortion going back to the states is a good thing. Is it a good thing or a bad thing?
It's a terrible thing. It was a national right in this country under Roe versus Wade, and a right shouldn't disappear when you cross state lines any more than my right to be married to my spouse should disappear when you cross state lines. The whole point of these constitutional protections is they apply to every American everywhere you go.
We hadn't heard that particular take on it before, and it was like a personal take and a unique take and made so much sense. I think later in that discussion, he kind of couched it in this idea of like you're going on a road trip with your spouse and you are gaining and losing freedoms along the way, like rights that you think you know are granted to you, and then you could cross a state line and realize you no longer have that right. It seems like a weird thing in this country, which is the argument about Roe v. Wade, like a national protection so that you don't have that scenario in which you're losing rights as you travel across the country. And Walls pointed out, I think he had three or four examples ready to go of women who became, you know, very ill. One woman who died because they couldn't get the care in their state. And Vance even said, I wish those people were alive today. I'm sure there are others too. But then he went on to kind of just talk about it in terms of
supporting families.
You wish
they're alive.
Great.
Well, if Roe v. Wade was the law, then these doctors wouldn't be worried about, you know, facing criminal prosecution for just giving medical care. So that's great. Great. Thank you for your wishes, your thoughts and prayers there.
Right. Thoughts and prayers kind of response.
Walls kind of found his footing in the abortion section. And then the moderators asked a question about the 2020 election. And this was J.D. Vance's response to it.
Senator Vance, you have said you would not have certified the last presidential election and would have asked the states to submit alternative electors. That has been called unconstitutional and illegal. Would you again seek to challenge this year's election results, even if every governor certifies the results? I'll give you 2 minutes.
Well, Nora, first of all, I think that we're focused on the future. We need to figure out how to solve the inflation crisis caused by Kamala Harris's policies, make housing affordable, make groceries affordable, and that's what we're focused on. But I want to answer your question because you did ask it. Look, what President Trump has said is that there were problems in 2020, and my own belief is that we should fight about those issues, debate those issues peacefully in the public square, and that's all I've said, and that's all that Donald Trump has said. Remember, he said that on January the 6th, the protesters ought to protest peacefully. And on January the 20th, what happened? Joe Biden became the president, Donald Trump left the White House, and now, of course, unfortunately, we have all of the negative policies that have come from the Harris-Biden administration. I believe that we actually do have a threat to democracy in this country, but unfortunately, it's not the threat to democracy that Kamala Harris and Tim Walz want to talk about. It is the threat of censorship.
It's the threat of censorship. That's what we should be talking about. That's the real threat to democracy, not the person election denying here.
The president who unsuccessfully, peacefully transferred power. The one who couldn't do it right.
Was he there on the steps of the Capitol for the inauguration?
The day of the certification.
He was not. His vice president was, but he was not there for the peaceful transfer.
I thought the elephant in the room a little bit, which Walls pointed out at one point in his response, is that like you are now Donald Trump's running mate because the previous running mate couldn't couldn't be involved because people were chanting "Hang Mike Pence," and he decided to certify the election. Like, big elephant in the room there. You're here because of that.
Actually. And this was like the lead up to all of this was J.D. Vance. You know, he was doing very well in this debate, and you're like, he's saying all these like crazy policies in a very reasonable way, and is killing him with kindness, as you said earlier. But this was the most damning moment of the debate for J.D. Vance, because the question about the 2020 election, this is the central problem with a Donald Trump presidency, is that he has not accepted the results of the election. And if you are his running mate and you are trying to articulate his points, you have to basically say...
I feel so strongly about this. I sneezed. It caused a physical
bless
response.
God
in my
bless
body.
You and God bless the yeah, United the States of America. You have to basically accept the crazy from Donald Trump. And J.D. Vance, his non-answer was very telling, and he tried to like switch to censorship, right, which is like totally not.
This is like,
but
when we
Walsh has
when
a
we talk to,
go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, no,
well,
I was going
to
say we can play
to people,
Walsh's response.
When we talk to people, like this is sometimes I go away from this and I come back to it. I can't believe we're in this position where the nominee from a major party has not conceded the previous election. How could we possibly go into an election trusting that this person would accept the results of this one? In fact, all evidence would suggest that they will not. And we've talked to Trump supporters who will say, I think the 2020 election was rigged, and I think this one will be fair. And then you say, but will you trust it if Kamala is elected? No. Will you trust if Donald Trump is elected? Yes. So we are still in that. You can say you want to look toward the future, but when your candidate has not accepted
the
previous
election. But it's not just his Trump supporters. I mean, Donald Trump is like, he's the head of this beast. But like, we're going to talk about this in the bonus episode on Hero Hero. It's actual elected officials who have to do this dance because of like the whims and the ego of like a crazy person in Donald Trump.
Right. And
just
you're talking about elected officials, one of them being J.D. Vance and watching him completely avoid it. But in here, our Hero bonus episode, we're going to talk about some of the interactions you had at the spin room of the previous debate. So kind of a similar setting, and we got to talk to some of the elected officials and just ask them those types of questions. And to your point, it's not just the random person attending the rallies, it's the elected officials. But it's like a very, I think it's called a specious argument, where you kind of make the argument and then you make the opposite side of the argument.
Yeah.
You are hearing that the election was stolen from these people in power. And then these people in power are using the fact that these average people believe the election to be stolen as the reason.
Because you that fucking told them it was
stolen.
What the fuck
you
is your problem?
Them. Yeah. You told them. You told Ugh. Them.
But let's look at Tim Walz, the response that he gave, because I thought this was like his best moment of the debate. And honestly, like all the stuff that happened earlier, this was him really taking J.D. Vance head on for really the first time in the debate after what was very cordial beforehand.
Well, I've enjoyed tonight's debate, and I think there was a lot of commonality here, and I'm sympathetic to misspeaking on things, and I think I might have with the senator.
Me too, man.
There's one, though, that this one is troubling to me, and I say that because I think we need to tell the story. Donald Trump refused to acknowledge this, and the fact is that I don't think we can be the frog in the pot and let the boiling water go up. He was very clear. I mean, he lost this election, and he said he didn't. 140 police officers were beaten at the Capitol that day, some with the American flag, several later died. And it wasn't just in there. In Minnesota, a group gathered on the state Capitol grounds in St. Paul and said, "We're marching to the governor's residence and there may be casualties." The only person there was my son and his dog, who was rushed out crying by state police. He is still saying he didn't lose the election. I would just ask that. Did he lose the 2020 election?
Tim, I'm focused on the future. Did Kamala Harris censor Americans from speaking their mind in the wake of the 2020 COVID situation?
That is a damning non-answer.
I thought that was a great, great response from Tim Walz. It is a damning non-answer. And it's the problem with every single one of these elected officials and Republicans who is basically going on the whims of a crazy, fragile man who just can't admit that he was a loser because he's based his whole personality on being a winner. And now you have the VP candidate afraid to say one way or the other
it's
because
like hard to watch
of Donald
almost.
Trump.
it's like hard to watch. You're watching him try and wriggle out of it and be like, but COVID censorship, you know? You're all right, have that conversation. Have it separately from will he accept the results of the election or not? And when we talk to people, when I talk to even people in my life trying to say, hey, this is how I see this. Sorry, that's a sticking point. He didn't accept the last one. He won't accept this one. We're going into an election.
And Governor Walz, he said it was a damning non-answer. Well, we talked to J.D. Vance in 2022, asked him the very same question, and we were able to get an answer out of him. And we've never put this video out before, but we thought, hey, this is kind of an important moment. He wouldn't answer it at the debate, but he did answer it to us back in 2022. So let me pull this up.
I was just wondering who won the 2020 election? Could you just answer, did Donald Trump win, yes or no?
Yes.
He did win.
Yep.
So will you concede if your opponent gets more votes, will you concede?
I really feel bad for you, man.
I just want to know if your opponent gets more votes, will you concede?
So an answer followed by a non-answer.
By a damning non-answer, I would say, right. Actually.
Another damning non-answer.
I'm sorry. I think we should be looking to the future. Let's talk about censorship, man. Why aren't we talking about censorship?
Okay, right, okay. You know what I follow, I mean? You there.
Yeah,
I
mean, yeah. There's some logic to what I'm fucking there. Saying.
Yeah.
All right, DeBrum, how do you feel about a moment of truth right now?
I need it.
You need it?
I'm thirsting for it. Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to ask a question, and I don't want you to answer it, but I'm going to answer it, okay? This is the moment of truth. Who won the 2020 election? It's a pretty simple question, and I can give a pretty simple answer right now. Joe Biden won the 2020 election. There was no evidence of widespread voter fraud. Trump's own attorney general said so. But there's only one influential person who says differently, and that is Donald Trump. And I say that because he really is the head of the monster. He based his whole personality on being a winner and calling others loser. But Donald Trump was a loser in 2020 election. And it's the one thing we can't get over in this election. One candidate refuses to accept reality and creates a new reality in which he isn't a loser, which would be innocent enough if he were making excuses about losing an Emmy. But this is democracy. We asked this question over and over again to people. We asked it in the spin room. Who won the 2020 election? Donald Trump is denying the election results. Tim Scott refused to answer it. Rick Scott said Biden won, but he's fine supporting Trump, who is an election denier. J.D. Vance said that Trump won, but that's not true. Because of that, January 6th happened. People died. There would be no storming of the Capitol if Donald Trump didn't say the election was stolen. And if our country elects Donald Trump, then the scary truth is our citizens are saying January 6th was okay. That is the stakes of this election. And that is the truth. Yes,
sorry,
you agree with that,
Trump?
I thought
you were asking a question.
There was no question. There was no question. Oh, no. Who won the election?
There would be a question. Oh, who won the election?
Well, I started
Joe
with that.
Biden.
It was Joe Biden. You're now free to answer the question.
You mentioned
the whole thing.
You mentioned those people we talked to. We're gonna elaborate on that in the bonus episode. Herohero.co/thegoodliars.
Click in the description. You can get the link right there, and you'll be supporting us, helping us to go to all these terrible, terrible places that we find ourselves in. DeBrum, what a night. What a night. Any closing thoughts on the debate? Or do we say it all?
We may have said it all. I mean, you know, you would have wanted to give the edge to Vance, but by the end of the night, I think it was maybe almost a toss-up. I don't think the news of this is going to ripple through to Election Day. So at the end of the day, I think they both did their assignments, which was try and, you know, advocate for their the top of the ticket, but also not make too many waves of their own. I think they kind of both did that.
More or less.
Semi-successful on each of their accounts.
Well, we're going to wrap up this episode, DeBrum, and thank everyone for listening and watching here. But before we go, I just have to know, do you have any words of wisdom?
I do.
Okay, great.
If you're ever struggling with a decision, just flip a coin. And then if you're disappointed by the results, do the opposite thing.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Don't leave it up to chance. That's good.
Right.
I like that.
But yeah, but do. Good. But then go with your reaction to that.
Go with your actual gut. Then you'll know. Okay, I like that, Devrim. I like that a lot. All right. Well, that does it for The Good Liars Tell the Truth. We'll see you next time.